Good evening. We can have interchanges afterwards at tea more personally. But I just wanted to share, today is my birthday. And I understand it's also Nanette's birthday, is that right? And I take the opportunity to thank my parents, Irene and Werner Kuberst, who have been with me throughout my 38 years and really lovingly caring for me. And I want to thank all the friends and teachers that made me, that contributed to my life. It's amazing to be a being, a human being, a sentient being that feels emotion and experience and meets life's stories and experiences. And I believe you all share that experience and that vision, that joy and that love and that yearning for happiness and love. And the older I get, the more I see it's not only humans, it's animals, it's beings I might not even know about that do share that wish for really wanting to be happy. And in this yearning, I'm also noticing there's certain levels of knowing for that happiness that appear. Like, for example, on some level I do know I'm happy if like my needs are fulfilled. I don't have to worry about money, or it's just a really great day in meeting people. So I kind of know about my happiness this way. But I'm noticing also there are different levels of knowing that happiness. And that's also because this happiness has different qualities, it has different layers. Right now, do you know that the sun is shining? Anybody would negate that? I mean, it is a question because it could be setting at this very point, right? But so far we don't use electric light in this room. So we do know that there's sun. It might be foggy. It was kind of foggy today. But there is sun. Would you all agree? Yes. Yeah. So please come forward, ask questions and make comments anytime. I did bring it with me, but if I bring sesame seeds, a whole pile of sesame seeds, would you know that there's oil in these seeds? Yeah, right. I mean, know it because we can also buy those bottles of oil, right, called sesame seed oil. So there has to be something happening, and then there's oil. But so if you would just see the seeds, it's seeds. And maybe not necessarily, maybe some kids or something don't know there's oil in there. And in the same way, like, I heard the story of a person was hanging out with his friend and telling his friend all his sorrows, and they got drunk. And then the friend sewed a precious jewel into the garment of the drunk one, that sorrowful one. He wanted to give him that jewel, but he thought he might not see it if he just lays it on the table or whatever. So he put it in the garment. But anyhow, that person walked around for 30 years not knowing he had a jewel in his garment. And when those friends met again 30 years later, he got pointed out. He's like, but I gave you that jewel. It was in your garment all along. You weren't poor. You weren't miserable. There was nothing lacking to you. You were rich. So there was a certain lack of knowing that was going on there about, for example, also another story could be told about a jewel falling into mud, right? And you might not see that it's a precious jewel because it's just all covered with mud. So in this way, I'm talking about different layers of knowing regarding the happiness that we already have. I heard there's a precept class that is happening here. And one of the first precepts that we take when we endeavor in this so-called Soto Zen path is a precept of taking refuge in Buddha. And Buddha means awakened one. And most of the years, any time I heard that word, any statue I saw about Buddha would pop up in my mind as being the reference of the word Buddha. I would think, oh, I take refuge. I wouldn't say I would take refuge in a statue, but I would take refuge in something that's large and pretty referential person or being that would look like a statue. Like those statues, right? I mean, I'm kind of like, I've always been connected to that, and just in this talk, I'm inviting you and me to question that, and also look at our different ways of knowing about that. So that's what I wanted to bring up. And again, feel free to come forward, and especially ask me if you don't understand when I said something. So, either in German or in English, when you hear the word refuge, if you look at it, it's a pretty unusual word. Like taking refuge, it makes sense. For example, those people in Somalia at this point, they're living in a place there's no food. And they want to go to a place where there is food so they don't die. And we call them refugees. Or my grandparents, they were in war on the east side of Germany and the Russians came and though they went to the west and though they were war refugees. So it kind of makes sense that you want to get away from a situation, you want to go to a better situation, and then you're a refugee. But I'm not sure if any of you would you consider yourself a refugee in that sense? I mean, that's what we're talking about. We're taking refuge, right? So what is that kind of taking refuge? And if you come to think of it, yeah, we are taking refuge every morning. People who come here, there's a certain refuge chant that people chant. And or you might do it at home in front of your altar, or you did it to your preceptor if you took the precepts. But I'm not sure if you and me are also aware many times throughout the day when we're taking refuge in something other than Buddha, Dharma and Sangha. For example, when I go into an airplane and I fly somewhere, I do take refuge into that pilot not being drunk or knowing his skills. There's a certain letting go that I'm doing because I can't help it. I don't know how to fly and I don't know the machinery or anything. So there's a certain surrender that's happening for me when I go into an airplane. So I am taking refuge at that time. I'm proposing that. Or if you go into a bus, you know. But I also catch myself several times in my life taking refuge in a substance, for example, if I'm like downbeat or something, have a nice bath or hot bath. It's always a big refuge place for me. Or a friend, right? Like I'm like tormented by a story or something, and I go to a friend and tell him my story, and I kind of go for refuge because there's a certain not knowing what about my life or whatever, and I want somebody else to open me up. So there are various levels of refuge that we might can trace down that we are doing already. So the question then is, when we say, I'm taking refuge in Buddha, how are those activities aligning up with taking refuge in Buddha? And I guess the bottom line of how we know we're taking refuge as Buddha is if we are liberated, meaning if we are happy. And free of all suffering. So again, when I said like, oh, and for many years, Buddha was for me some kind of imagery, there was some statue-like imagery or whatever. Now I would say I just didn't know. The ignorance about, and what we still have at times, the ignorance about Buddha qualities, that which we call Buddha, the awakened one, can be found in specific qualities that you actually can, that you know. That you met somebody and something resonated in you and you have a certain vibe. No, it's too new agey, but too your heart just starts singing, right? There's something that feels awakened or woken up in the presence of that person. And, you know, and that's probably in the experiential realm a valid indicator. But I want to talk more right now, bear with me a little logically so we can actually find some agreement about what it is. Because if you don't use specific logic or words to it, then we might get fussy about what Buddha is, right? So there are six ways one can. By the way, I don't know, the door. If you want to come forward in any way, feel free. Yeah. So there are six outlines or six qualities that I want to name about Buddha. What awakening is, what the awakened one, the qualities of the awakened one. And and I want to tell you the end of the story right away, so you won't like be too surprised. That's you. I'm talking about you. I'm not talking about a statue or an image or anything in the sky or anywhere. I'm talking about you and me. So it's the Buddha is uncreated. has no beginning, middle or end. It doesn't arise and doesn't cease. And it's perfectly peaceful in this way, because there's no coming and going. Remember, that's you. And it's right here. It's immediately present. Because it's not constructed by any thoughts or any concepts. That's why it's right here. It's not reached by our thinking. So it's right here. You are right here. Awakening is right here. And it's not realized through any external things. So even though I'm giving a talk right now, it's not through any external event that that's being seen. It sees itself. It's no external circumstances are getting in the way of that. And these are called the benefits for oneself. So there's benefit of self and there's benefit of others. So these are the qualities that are ascribing your being, your innermost essence, to be uncreated and right here, spontaneously present, and through no external conditions is that being seen or pointed out or anything. And the other three qualities are maybe more known. Buddha is deep wisdom. The wisdom who knows those first three qualities, that's a Buddha wisdom. That's what we are realizing. That's what, if all the clouds part and we really know it's daylight and day, that's a wisdom. The wisdom that knows that it's uncreated, the wisdom that knows that it's spontaneously present. The wisdom that knows that it's not realized through external conditions, that wisdom is a Buddha's wisdom. And compassion, the other quality of our Buddha nature, is love. Buddha nature is love. And sometimes we are like talking about love being seen through certain events. The event that's here meant by the fact that the teachings about awakening have been set forth, have been shared from one person to the other, from teacher to student, many, many ages long. That's love. The love of sharing the teachings, the sharing this story that you are Buddha. And then there's enlightened activity. That's the sixth one, the sixth quality of Buddha. And that's the quality of the power of Buddha. The one that's destroying wrong views and errant tendencies and any doubt. So wisdom, compassion and activity are those qualities of Buddha that are benefiting beings. Sure, that's not new to you, is it? We have various methods how we pursue the awakening, our inner awakening, to realize that inner awakening. And some of them make sense and some of them don't. For example, if somebody tells you to sit upright in correct posture, it's kind of logical because it helps you not fall asleep and you have maybe less backache and there's a certain uprightness that comes along with it. So there's various logical reasons that come along with that method. So out of this we would say, well, that makes sense through because of that. I can see how those methods are going to help me see my true nature, see Buddhahood through awakening. And then we would maybe conclude that this is a condition that would help us see our awakening, right? But for example, there are stories of our ancestors where one teacher takes a shoe and hits the other person. The person wakes up. It's maybe not making so much sense why that would have happened. And then though we maybe not necessarily take the correlation between the event of hitting the shoe and the wakening up. But what in both cases is happening, the wake up is happening. And the wake up is happening in the person. And we might say, oh, you know, the shoe triggered the wake up, or the person sitting long hours triggered the wake up. But the only thing that triggered the wake up is that the Buddha, this person has Buddha nature. That's the only reason why this person can wake up. If it would be something that's apart from the person, or that's only there in a like it has to be trained or cultivated through conditions, then it would be sheer impossible. And it would be conditioned too. Then it would be based, awakening would be based on conditioning. So because it's not conditioned, it's always here. Any external things don't, they might look like they have something to do, but they actually don't because you're not creating anything when you practice, or you're not taking any, like, you're not making your wake up happen. Your wake up is happening every moment, and it's self awareness that's gonna make is the one, if anything, that will know about your and my awakening, or happiness, or deep love. So because it's self-awareness that's the awakening, it's not the external, anything external. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for the question. So, in this life that we are in right now, I'm not saying that I'm Buddha, and you're probably not going around saying you're Buddha. And yet, to just it's like would be a sesame seed that would go around saying I'm oil, right? So but if it's again no method or no real thing, external thing, that's going along with us through this process of being like really fully awakened. I want to talk about four things briefly, if it's not too many lists for you. That are pertaining to what we call practice. Because generally speaking, in Soto Zen circles, we like to say, well, you just sit looking at the volume, that's practice. But you and I know that just sitting and looking at a wall alone is not practice. It's not, nobody's going to awaken through that. It has to do with what you're doing with your mind. Right? Because it's self-awareness that's going to realize itself. So it's what your mind is waking up. And there's four riches, for a wealth that you just need to owe. It's already here, but you just need to owe it. And that's what we may, that's so to speak, the posture of awakening. And that's basically like, again, what we're saying in Soto Zen of just sit upright looking at the wall. It's this wealth that you need to owe in order to wake up. And it's your wealth, you already have it. And the first is faith. Deep trust and faith that you are Buddha. That it's just about the clouds parting. And that you don't have to run around, do things. It's really just about the clouds parting that show that you have this inherent goodness that is you. You are good. I'm good. So this irreversible faith in our inherent goodness, in our inherent true being awakening, that's a wealth, that's part of the posture that we call sasen. And the second one is love. So there's many words said about love, right? But one love, what the way is, to characterize this love that we are, is to see the love in everybody. So long I just see the love in one person, or just feel it in myself, but I don't think anybody else knows what I'm feeling or whatever. That's a limited version of it. Or if I'm kind only to a certain group of people, but I'm not kind to some other people. Because that's still very, it's not that it's not. Love is love. I'm not dividing love into any parts. I'm just saying it's just a certain limit on love. So it's a kind of, it's a second quality that would be our Sasan posture, would be the wealth that we need to own for awakening. Is this pure perception where we see love and to see everybody as a good person. Everybody is trying hard to be a good person. Even as people say they don't, they actually are. Because the actions they're doing are said, you know, to be happy. So this pure perception. Also, not only because everybody shares the same aspiration, it's also that they all share the same good nature, so the same goodness of our heart, the Buddha nature that we all are. It's also like in this whole dependent arising of things, everybody has been our close relative on one point or another in our multiple of lives. One like expands the vision on like, you know, I don't know if you believe in rebirth or not, but like, you know, anything that helps, right? So just take it on and imagining, okay, here I am having a life with a mother and a father and friends and spouse or whatever. And that happens with every being that's living. And so, if I had more lives than one, which I might have had, then that was already happening in each lifetime. There was a mother and a father and friends. So, it's just a very vast view to say, wow, every person I ever met maybe has been my close relative. There's kind of a certain you know, warmth coming up along with that vision. So that might be helpful. It's a tool to like helping us to develop this pure perception that everybody wants love and is love. And the third posture or quality of Sasan that we want to have in order to see our true nature is bodhicitta, which is a mind of awakening. It's this wish of wanting to reach complete enlightenment, like complete knowing for the benefit of everybody. And the fourth one is impermanence. Impermanence being that, you know, sitting here and having heard that being really happy is connected with being really awake, being really yourself awake. To really realize that the only kind of like, how do you say, measure, or the only the only thing that we have is time. That's the only thing we have. There's nothing else we have in this life but time. So how do we spend this time, right? So if we want something, then we invest in it through time. So in this endeavor of wanting to be the Buddha that we are, time is our only thing we have. And it's very, very precious. Each moment, each hour, each day, it's very precious. So you could say, to summarize it in these words of called the Sasana posture that realizes itself, it's irreversible faith that you are Buddha. It's a love and a pure perception in anybody you see and meet, even the mosquito that bite you. And it's a wish to truly awaken, the intention of true awakening for the benefit of everybody. Because imagine, if you know about your awakening, about your uncreatedness, if you know about your being spontaneously present and not messed up by external conditions, you can help many, many people, many, many beings. So this kind of intention of wanting to sit, that's also what we call sometimes having the head on fire. It's also head on fire coming from, well, and there's impermanence. The only thing we have is time. So these four things of our sasen, that makes up sasen. The qualities of our sasen are being faith, pure perception, bodhicitta, and the knowing of the impermanence of our life. And that's kind of the, how do you call it, the perpetual force, you could say. So it's kind of, you know, you have some delicious sauce and you boil it and it gets really juicy and really, like, the flavors come out more like that. That's these four are like the essence of our sasana practice that makes it lead straight towards Buddhahood, which you already are. So I'm aware that there's were lists, some lists there, which sometimes can turn a little bit like, wait a minute, this, I heard it somewhere here like this, and now you hear it like this, and so I'm totally welcome any questions you have. This is my presentation for tonight. Obscurations taught, and so first the obscuration of afflictions, which is negative emotions like desire, anger, jealousy, and stupidity. That's the first one. And the second one is the obscuration of cognition, meaning we can't comprehend uncreated. There's a certain kind of my cognitive endeavors, like, sounds great, but I don't know what you're talking about. that kind of obscuration of like not quite knowing what's behind the words, just hearing words and like, yeah, but I don't know what you're talking about. That's an obscuration of cognition.
Did you say stability?
Stupidity.
Like one of the afflictive obscurations?
Stupidity.
Stupidity.
So it's actually a great story I heard. I really want to share before I'm answering your question. About stupidity that a friend of mine, a teacher of ours, told. And he said that his neighbor constantly came to him and said, I lost my job and my karma is really bad. And then next day he came and said, I was late to an appointment, to my interview. My karma is really bad. So he said, came the next day, he said, I lost my house key. My karma is really bad. And our friend said, that's not your karma, you're just stupid. You're just stupid. And then, of course, the guy was like, I didn't want to hear that, right? But there's some responsibility that comes along with owning our stupidity. Like to like, you know, things don't go that way, you know, like can I owe that to my own being, you know, taking on responsibility instead of pushing it towards my karma. Like, oh, I'm just made that way, I'm always like that. There's a kind of like a lack of owing it. And nobody likes to hear that they're stupid. So. Yes?
This may be my stupidity. I was thinking, as he was speaking, about some obstacles which may not be quite the same as obscurations, but which are cultural. For example, in our culture, perhaps because of other religious traditions and upbringings, often a great emphasis is placed on modesty as a virtue.
Mm-hmm.
And we are given to understand we should not put ourselves forward, we should not be prideful in any way. And it would seem, at least maybe superficially, that this emphasis on modesty makes it hard for some of us to think, well, yes, I am Buddha. Yeah, because we right away think, but how could I be? That's not possible.
Mm.
So, would you say anything about
that?
I don't know if it's an obscuration, but it may be a bit of a boulder.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's a heavy burden, especially in our culture, I would say, where like where it's hard to enter a humble posture when there's so much pain about feeling not worthy or not feeling loved or anything. Well, two things come to mind. The first one is like, well, I'm not proposing you going around saying I am Buddha. And again, it, because it is a certain virtue, as you said, a virtue, to take one's place, to know one's place and to like, for example, know, well, the Buddha is omniscient. I'm not omniscient. I barely know what day it is, actually. But then that's already wise again in a certain way, for example, to know your limitation in in like, oh, I want to be generous, but I'm not that generous. Like, I can be generous to three beggars on the street, but with the fifth one, I'm actually like, don't want to give that much anymore because I feel limitations come up and we see, we have this game of reflecting and knowing our place through teachers and ancestors of the tradition that we read and hear about, who displayed from their knowing, from their realizing of their, from their awakening, they displayed activities that are like, that actually show us how limited we are, and that's actually a virtue. That's not an obscuration. To know that I can't live in a cave without getting insane at this point in my practice is helpful. It's not a hindrance. But I hear of people having been able to do it, and then it's inspiring. And so then that virtue can, that's again a virtue, like it can, that limitation can turn into unwholesome action of being, having that aspiration. So that's one way I take, a take I have. The other take I would say is that we haven't been, like, the only way we really can give love is by not able to receive love. And it's one of the most important, crucial stepping points on our spiritual journey to being able to give love, but first of all to be able to receive love, to know the awakened ones love us. The awakened ones, Buddha Shakyamuni, you know, our ancestors, our teachers, they love us unconditionally. And we hear about unconditional love and we kind of like, great, but I only believe it when I see it. But that also can come but end, and that also comes from our own limitations of being able to receive love. So, for example, on your birthday, are you able to receive all the love that's coming at you? And another way you could test to how able you are to receive love is by thinking back of how many people are you coming up in your mind that that benefited you, where you feel really benefited by in your life. And I'm not talking about people that are like, you know, these outstanding figures that were like, you know, really great beings. No, they had their flaws, but there were moments and meetings with these people that they showed the true affection to you. Like, you really felt by them looking at you that you mattered, and that you are, that it's important to them that you were there with them and that they loved you. And so to be able to recall and recognize meetings like that, then maybe not only with relatives, but also with people you met in a store, you know, some kind of store clerk who like really good, that really said an authentic good morning to you or something, you know, like really moments. And can one really take that in as like, not just like, oh, they just said it because they want to have business, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's just like, wow, somebody really, for them that matters that I'm there and I'm really receiving it. Like those moments like that, I think they help us to get used to that opening up, that we are love, right? I mean, that's, if we are one awakened to that we are love, we gotta first feel that we are love. There's a certain kind of, it's a crucial spiritual stepping stone to really realize that we are the object of love for others. You can talk on tea, I believe. It's tea out there. And And these are the epithets, the characteristics of a Buddha with which I'm closing. Thus come one, worthy one, perfectly awakened one, endower with knowledge and conduct, follower of the good way, knower of the world, unsurpassed one, guide of people to be tamed, teacher of divine and human beings, blessed one. Again, that was actually you, so I read it again. Thus come one, worthy one, perfectly awakened one, endowed with knowledge and conduct, follower of the good way, knower of the world, unsurpassed one, guide of people to be tamed, teacher of divine and human beings, blessed one. Being fabulous, I love the same.